It was a big week for women in politics, with Nancy Pelosi retaking her position as Speaker of the House, a position that will be overseeing a record number of women in the U.S. House of Representatives. Pelosi pointed out the significance of the moment when she retook the gavel at the Capitol yesterday.
We all have the ability and the privilege to serve with over 100 women members of Congress, the largest number in history.
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren also threw her hat in the ring for a 2020 presidential run, making her the first big name to announce and the first official 2020 female candidate so far.
But some in the media have already been wondering if Warren can overcome comparisons to Hillary Clinton and questions about her likability. That's got others asking if anything has changed for the way women are treated in politics in 2019. Diane Bystrom is the director emerita of the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women in Politics at Iowa State University. Diane, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, let's start in Congress. Diane, how significant is it to have so many women, this now record number of women in Congress now?
Well, I think it is significant, and it's interesting for me because I started doing my research and my dissertation research on the 1992 election, which was called the Year of the Woman because of the large increase in women taking place that year, the largest percentage increase, and then here we have another year being called the same thing. And the parallels I would draw is that there were significant pieces of legislation back in 1992, like parental leave, sponsored by Pat Schroeder of Colorado, that she really couldn't move forward. And enough women were elected that year, and certainly in less numbers than this year. So some of those issues that these women have been working on and some men in Congress, I think, can now maybe pass through with a greater number of women, both in the House, especially in the Senate.
There is a divide, though, a lot more women on the Democratic side of the aisle than the Republican side of the aisle in the House, especially when you look at the incoming class. As I understand it, 35 incoming Democratic women in the House, one on the Republican side.
Yeah, and that's something that we've documented really since the 1980s. There was more equity between women from both political parties being elected in the early 1980s, and that has been really something that's grown over the years, not only at the congressional level, but also at the state legislative level, where we see pretty much three-fourths of state legislators across the country being Democrats, or at least two-thirds and one-third being Republican.
Now, we'll get to the presidency in a little bit. It's kind of a special case in some ways. Are there fewer challenges now for women seeking Congress than there were maybe even back in 1992? Have things changed significantly?
Yeah, I think they have changed, and this comes from my research. I've done basically research on media coverage of women candidates since the 1990 campaign in male versus female races, primarily for Senate and governor. And one thing we've seen over time is that there's much more equitable coverage, I think, and there's actually much more acceptance by voters. And so both voters being more acceptable of women candidates as well as the media covering them in more equitable terms. But that kind of stops when we get those highest levels of office. And so studies dating back to Elizabeth Dole when she ran for the Republican nomination in 1999, what we see is that we still have that gendered ceiling and those gendered stereotypes of women when they run for vice president, president. And I think we're seeing it a little bit with Nancy Pelosi. You know, basically in positions of power, we still see those gender stereotypes, not only in media coverage, also in social media now, which is being studied more and more, and also in expectations of voters.
Talking to Diane Bystrom from Iowa State University, looking at women in politics, what is changing over the years, what isn't changing over the years. Diane, let's turn to those higher levels now. This is in the news this week, Elizabeth Warren declaring her candidacy, Senator Warren running for president. And this issue comes up right away. A Politico article was getting a lot of the attention. The likability factor, is she likable? Is this a question that we in the media are more prone to ask about a woman than a man, especially when we're talking about a race for president?
Absolutely, and it's been well documented by research. It's sort of it's called the double bind, and so actually that term was first used when we talk about women's leadership in terms of corporate leadership in the corporate sphere. So that research done on corporations and the expectation of women's leadership has spilled over into the political sphere as well. And the double bind, you know, to put it kind of succinctly, is if you're damned if you do or damned if you don't. And what that means is, as the media, and, you know, the media basically, I started out my career as a reporter, so the media really reflects in some ways, sometimes the bias is held just by our population here, by normal citizens. And so there are certain attributes that we attribute with leadership, and they tend to be masculine attributes. And then there's certain attributes that we attribute with being a good female or a good feminine, and those do not correlate. And so if a woman acts tough, like she needs to be, you know, elected president, then she isn't feminine enough. And so we certainly saw in 2008 and 2016 with Hillary Clinton, you know, her voice was commented on. Some people thought she smiled too much, and then the next commentator thought she didn't smile enough. You know, there was one story I remember out of Iowa for some event during the pre-caucuses where, you know, they were all speaking at a Democratic Party event, and, you know, Bernie Sanders, who tends to shout and yell, was described as passionate in the same story where Hillary Clinton was described as shrill. And so there certainly are those kind of likability standards. The interesting thing to me, and there was a great feed on Twitter the other day by a male reporter out of North Carolina, I believe, where in 2016 there were many people on Twitter saying that they didn't like Hillary Clinton because she wasn't likable enough, and they thought Elizabeth Warren was more likable. So he strung through all these things he had archived, and so now Elizabeth Warren, who was suddenly more likable than Hillary Clinton in 2016, is now not likable.
I saw a study, and I wish I dug up the reference, a study where people presented voters with a fictional state senator, a male and a female, okay, ran it by them, and then if they described the candidate as ambitious, for the man, approval and respect went up. For the woman, hypothetical candidate, if they were described as ambitious, their approval, their respect went down among the people studied.
Yes, and that is in the double bind. So, for example, we praise men in the corporate and political world for being ambitious, but in Hillary Clinton's case, in fact, I did one paper where part of it, I looked at the times that she was defined as ambitious vis-a-vis Trump and vis-a-vis Bernie Sanders, because this was in the primary stage, and when Trump and Sanders were described as ambitious, it was always in positive terms, and this is by the media, and when Hillary Clinton was, it was like she was too ambitious, and it's like, okay, well, if you're running for president, ambition is a good thing to have. And so, yes, and so those are the things that still sort of befuddle those of us who study media coverage. I will say this year, though, one thing I've noticed is that after that political story ran and it got a lot of traffic on Twitter from a lot of academics, myself and others, who jumped on it right away, and I do think that there's more of a recognition this year among the media that maybe that's not the path we should go down.
Now, earlier you were talking about changes at a lower level, still pretty high level, state legislatures, governor, Congress, that sort of thing. We are seeing more women in these positions, more women running and in some cases succeeding. What is changing there? Is because it seems like it could be a chicken or egg thing. Women win, and so people get used to the idea. But what changed to allow the women to win in the first place?
Well, I think what happened, and when I was director of the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women in Politics, we ran a campaign school for women called Ready to Run Iowa every other year, and it's part of a national network. There's about 20 programs across the country, headquartered at Rutgers University. So what we saw after 2016, so we ran our last workshop in 2017, and the Catt Center is planning to do their next one in 2019. But what we saw in 2016, the day after the election, and we hadn't advertised our campaign school yet because we were waiting until the election took place on how we wanted to advertise it because it was going to take place in the spring. We had like 93 people that had called the Catt Center within 3 days asking when our next training session was. We ended up having 172, mostly women. Ours is also open to men, public university. But we had 172 participants in our 2017 workshops, and we'd had 71 the cycle earlier, which was our highest point. So we more than doubled our attendance. And so that happened all over the country. So what happened is that instead of, I think, being discouraged by Hillary Clinton's loss, it lit a fire under a lot of women, particularly younger women and women of color and women from a lot of diverse backgrounds, in thinking that we just can't rely on this generation of 60 and 70-year-old women to represent us, and so we need to run. So we started seeing our participants in Ready to Run running for school boards. We had a number of school boards in Iowa that were flipped from male majority to female majority after our Ready to Run workshop. And I think the representation in the Iowa legislature went up from 35 to 45, which is a big increase, and many of them attended Ready to Run. And so Cindy Axne, who was elected from the Iowa third congressional district was a ready-to-run participant, Deidre DeGiro, who ran for Secretary of State. And so I think these women, first of all, a great interest in women running for office, and then the availability of campaign schools across the country to provide both partisan and nonpartisan training.
We're talking to Diane Bystrom. She's Director Emerita of the Kerry Chapman Catt Center for Women and Politics at Iowa State University. We're talking about the treatment of women in politics as Elizabeth Warren announces she's running for president, as Nancy Pelosi retakes her position as the most powerful woman in the nation's capital.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the way women are treated in American politics? As a voter, what do you find yourself thinking about when you evaluate a woman running for office? What changes have you noticed in the way candidates and politicians are treated over your lifetime? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time.
We're continuing our conversation with Diane Bystrom from Iowa State University about gender in American politics.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see men and women being treated differently when they run for office, especially when they run for higher office, especially a president of the United States? Are there things you've noticed that the media judges women politicians on but not men? Are there things you think are different? What do you see? Have you run for office yourself, especially if you're a woman? Love to hear from you. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Caitlin joins us now in La Crosse. Caitlin, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Caitlin?
I just wanted to kind of voice my opinion. So I think that some of those stereotypical traits that people think of with women and that might sometimes be associated negatively with politics are actually what I think could continue to allow a woman to flourish in politics. So maybe that gentleness and ability to listen and reason with people, I think that that could be what actually brings women further into politics, and that even though sometimes they're viewed negatively, that they can actually be a huge asset.
Caitlin, thanks a lot for bringing that up. Diane, a couple things there, I think. One, are these attributes, the better listening, the gentleness that could help someone in politics? And two, I mean, these are kind of stereotypical views of women. Do they play out among women politicians?
I would say yes. I think she makes a good observation. I wrote a chapter several years ago basically arguing that women just need to know the stereotypes that voters and the media hold with women. There are some stereotypes, for example, that voters hold for women candidates that are good. Voters, for example, perceive women as more honest than men and more collaborative. And so those are types of things that voters are going to assume about you if you're a woman candidate. So you don't have to go out there like many men have to. So we find men, you know, stressing their honesty in their television ads because they're not perceived as honest as women. So women are perceived as honest. They are perceived as compassionate, collaborative. It kind of plays a little bit into the double bind, but it certainly can be something that really works for them well, even in their media coverage, when they are elected to office, because, you know, studies have shown that they do tend to work across the aisle more than men. They do tend to introduce legislation with a member of the other political party, and that time sometimes often gets praised once they're elected. But certainly something like their honesty, that's something that they, you know, don't have to, I would argue that you don't really have to, you know, talk about your honesty in an ad because people are going to perceive you as honest. The other flip side of it, though, is that they're not perceived as tough. And that can be particularly hard, I think, in an election cycle where masculine issues are at the forefront. Now, the 2018 cycle was a little different, and I think the reason it was so good for women is that compassion was really something that I think voters wanted in 2018. And so they saw that in these women candidates, who, by the way, what we're seeing now in studies on the 2018 election is that women were campaigning much more in 2018 on those issues of being a mom. You know, suddenly it was not only it was a strength to be perceived as a mom and to, you know, have those compassionate issues. So the 2018 cycle, I think, was really unique in the fact that I do think a lot of women were elected because they were able to not only tap into those images of being compassionate and collaborative and caring, which voters wanted, but they also tended to talk about pocketbook issues that on the issue front are very important to voters.
Thanks, Caitlin, for the call. We'll go now to Carolyn in Winona, Minnesota. Carolyn, hi.
Hi. So I remember when Ruth Bader Ginsburg said that somebody asked her do you think women should be on the Supreme Court and how many? And she said 12 because we haven't had our chance. And I think that older women should have their chance. You know, you were talking earlier and implying that younger women should run and whatever, which is great. But what about women that are older that have not had a voice?
Oh, I certainly think that older women should run, and not trying to do that. When we had our Ready to Run campaign school, we had people there from their early 20s until their 70s. And there's some women, you know, myself included, I just retired. I'm 65. And so, you know, when I was in a position and, you know, at the university that I wouldn't, you know, I thought about running for school board or city council and really knew that I really didn't have the time to do that. So I think a lot of women at whatever stage in their life, and that we should listen to them. I recently did an interview on Nancy Pelosi and about how she might be both a role model, but there should be the symbiotic relationship between Nancy Pelosi and what younger women like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez could learn from her, as well as what she could learn for these younger members of Congress. And having read Nancy Pelosi's book that she wrote a couple of years ago about that, I think that is going to be a really good relationship between some of these older women in Congress who certainly have led the way for these younger members of Congress. So I encourage women to run at any stage of their life.
Carolyn, thanks for the call. We're talking to Diane Bystrom from Iowa State University about women and politics in 2019. Back to your calls now. Steve is with us in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I mean, obviously there's been such a shift over the past generation.
Oh, no, we lost you, Steve. I'm sorry, your line cut out for us there. Let's see, our producer summed up his comments. He thinks some of the stereotypes do hold true. He sees some changing, including Brett Kavanaugh being criticized by some anyway for showing emotion in those dramatic Supreme Court hearings last month. Maybe some standards changing, Diane.
Yeah, I think so. You know, that's sort of an anecdotal evidence. You know, the studies that I refer to, you know, you can talk anecdotally and you can have some examples, but typically if you're looking quantitatively at what's happened is that, you know, men can be criticized for that. You know, you just reach back into several election cycles. I'm trying to think what presidential candidate cried in New Hampshire, and I'll think about it soon. But, you know, so men, you know, have been sometimes penalized. Now, on the other hand, President Obama was wild, you know, pretty much embraced for his compassion and some of his feminine characteristics. And so, you know, I would say that there's no clear evidence about men being handicapped for being too emotional. There was, of course, I think some talk about Brett Kavanaugh, but there was also some talk about actually, you know, some other attributes that he displayed during his hearing as well. And so there's really no studies over time that will show that, but there are some anecdotal evidence that men can be penalized by being too emotional. But like I said, Obama was really embraced for having that feminine side.
Steve, thanks for the call. Sorry we lost your line there. Dwayne joins us now in Weston. Hi, Dwayne.
Hey, hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I've been following Elizabeth Warren, and she does get a little, you know, in your face when she talks. But, I mean, if I had to bet my house, I bet it's going to be Kamala Harris or Beto O'Rourke as a nominee, and Biden is a, you know, you never know with him. And he kind of lost it last year when he waffled 2 years ago on the, going to run. But.
All right, gotcha. So Kamala Harris is another woman, a likely candidate, Diane, people are paying attention to. I don't know if her campaign is far enough along that people have started throwing likability questions at her. Do you anticipate that?
Well, and here's one thing I'm going to say out there, too. First of all, I think one of the things that's going to be different this year is I think we're going to have several women candidates on the Democratic side, of course, announced. And so I think that is going to be something that, you know, the media and voters aren't just going to be solely focused on one political candidate like they were on Hillary Clinton in 2008. And in 2016, they were somewhat focused on Carly Fiorina for a little bit, but she was never a front runner for the Democratic, the Republican nomination. So one thing I think we're going to see, so the names being tossed about are Kirsten Gillibrand, certainly Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, and then the other person, you know, for your Midwestern voters there, I mean, Midwestern visitors just a state away, is that, you know, Amy Klobuchar has been mentioned as a possible candidate. And I mean, I think she comes, you know, so I think, and maybe it's because we're all from the Midwest, but I think that there's an argument about an Amy Klobuchar type who has prosecutorial experience like Kamala Harris, but also I think she emerged as one of the, you know, I loved watching, you know, both of them during the Senate judiciary hearings. But looking at Kamala Harris, who questioned Kavanaugh, but also Amy Klobuchar, who really kind of came across, you know, in a way as being kind of emerging from that more centrist point of view that asked the hard questions, but with those Midwestern kind of, you know, persona. I personally met Amy Klobuchar. She was, I think, the last speaker I brought in before I retired for the Mary Louise Smith Chair in Women in Politics, and she has a wicked sense of humor, and she's a great speaker, so I think she's another one to keep your eye on. And my hope is that, first of all, the media has become, I think, you know, especially with this reaction to this political story written, by the way, by a woman reporter. Basically, I think they've been more sensitized that maybe this is not the way we should cover politics. Instead, we should look at public policy issues and not be covering the horse race. But secondly, I think there's going to be a number of women candidates seeking the Democratic nomination. So I can't expect that all the stories are going to have to focus on their likability. So I think they're going to get off that trope and maybe look at other issues because we're going to have more women running.
It's a good place to leave it. Diane, thanks a lot for joining us today.
And thanks for having me. Everybody have a great weekend.
You too. That's Diane Bystrom, Director Emerita of the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women in Politics at Iowa State University. She was with us to talk about the experience of women in politics after voters elected a record number of women to the U.S. House in the 2018 midterms.
Coming up Monday on Central Time, the campaign for presidential nominations is a year away, but states are already making changes in their caucus and primary rules. We'll find out how little changes can make a big difference for candidates and voters.
That and a look at some of the most intriguing stories in the worlds of science and technology. That and more all coming up Monday here on Central Time.